Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, October 11, 2016. Child marriages are still a big problem in South Sudan and elsewhere around the world.
The worst place to be a girl is in Niger, Chad, Central African Republic, Mali, and Somalia. They are all countries that have internal conflict or have recently come out of civil wars and conflicts. These are situations that are particularly dangerous for girls.
And South Sudanese former defense minister is condemning the deadly attacks on the roads around Juba town.
On both sides of the divide, you see that there is overt sectarian ethnic mobilization. You have heard of what has happened in the villages in Equatoria, that farmers in their fields are being strafed from above using helicopter gunships.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A new report from the Save the Children says each year 15 million girls are married before the age of 18. Some are as young as 10. The aid organization estimates there are 700 million women around the world today who are married in childhood. The report was released today, the International Day of the Girl. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Save the Children report is entitled Every Last Girl, Free to Live, Free to Learn, Free from Harm. President and CEO Carolyn Miles describes child marriage as an enormous problem.
One girl under 15 is married every 7 seconds, and it's a big piece of what's holding girls back. What happens when a girl gets married at a young age is she drops out of school. She will probably have a baby very shortly after getting married at 13 or 14. That's very dangerous for the mom. So the maternal mortality rate for young mothers is much higher. The child mortality rate for her child is going to be much higher.
The report ranks which countries are the best and worst places to be a girl. Miles says the top-rated countries are in Scandinavia.
Sweden comes out on the top, followed by Finland, Norway, Netherlands, and Belgium. There's very low rates of child marriage, teen pregnancy. Maternal mortality rate is low. Almost all girls complete secondary school and go beyond that, obviously. And there's a lot of representation of women in the highest level of government, which we think is important in setting policies that are going to help women and girls.
The United States ranks 32nd among the best places for girls to live. Miles reveals who's at the bottom of the rankings of 144 countries.
Well, the worst place to be a girl is in Niger, and that's followed by Chad, Central African Republic, Mali, and Somalia. So these are all African countries. They are all countries as well that have internal conflict or have recently come out of civil wars and conflicts. These are situations that are particularly dangerous for girls.
The world's newest country, South Sudan, ranks 132nd. Of the 38 countries at the bottom of the list, only three are not sub-Saharan African, namely Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and Yemen.
These are countries that, in addition to a lot of them being conflict countries, they're obviously very poor.
The Save the Children chief says many child marriages are arranged by families.
One of the things that makes it so hard is you're really trying to change behavior. And what you're trying to convince families, frankly, is that girls are as valuable as boys in terms of going on and getting an education and being able to have a productive life.
She says the organization works closely with communities to encourage behavior change and create a safe environment to reject child marriage.
One of the things that we have found is really successful is if you have some very high-level leadership on these issues. And I'll give you an example. It's a country that's really near the bottom. It's Sierra Leone. But there, the First Lady has actually said, I am not going to see this happening to my girls in Sierra Leone. She is leading a campaign, really, against early marriage and against violence against girls.
ending child marriage by 2030 is part of the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
If 50% of your population is not as productive as they could be, as healthy as they could be, as having the opportunities that they could take up, then your country's not going to develop.
Save the Children warns if current trends continue, the total number of women married in childhood will grow from 700 million today to around 950 million by 2030. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
These past weekend's attacks on civilian traveling on the Juba and Juba-Nimule roads have sparked social media outrage from members of the diaspora. Some are calling for calm and an immediate investigation, while others have been accusing the government of inciting the violence. VOA's Ayen Bior spoke to a South Sudanese embassy official in Washington about what the government is doing to ease tensions among the diaspora and help beef up security on the roads leading in and out of Juba town.
Reports say 21 people died and 20 others were wounded, including women and children, during the weekend attack. Scores of South Sudanese from around the world expressed their outrage over the incident. Ambassador Gordon Boy, consular and diaspora affairs at the South Sudan Embassy in Washington, says the government has deployed more forces to the roads and is calling for calm and restraint, while at the same time condemning the road violence.
The government already has taken measures to deploy more forces to these roads. Before, the government thought that maybe if those forces were allied to SPLA-IO, then with the opening of cantonment sites, then they would show up. Because we don't want to show to the international community that we are the one violating the ceasefire. But now the international community, including the JMAC, realize that these people, either they are disconnected from the SPLA-IO of General Taban, or they are some sorts of groups which have not yet declared themselves, and then they have to be declared as a negative forces.
One person on social media wrote that he is praying for restraint to prevail in South Sudan, while another person described the killings as cowardly and wrote that gunmen should make a clear distinction between government and innocent civilians, adding that waging war against the government should not involve civilians. Boy says there are not enough government security personnel to cover all parts of the main roads in South Sudan.
You cannot protect a 700-kilometer road or 800-kilometer. So what they do, they move as 5 people, 10 people, and they do surprise attacks. So you cannot put all the forces in 1,000-kilometer road. You will not make it because it would need maybe 1,000 of forces. So it's not about investigation. We know there are negative forces attacking civilians, and we made taken measures to ensure that it is not happening. But yet, it is happening because they can go and surprise, you know, go to the a kilometer where there are forces and attack a car or a truck or something like that.
Attacks on travelers in South Sudan have occurred since the violence broke out nearly 3 years ago. Some civilians, including those in Yei, have blamed the attacks on government soldiers. Boy blames last weekend's attacks on bandits, who he says use ethnicity as a motive to kill civilians.
So this kind of killing is something that is disturbing us and is also disturbing the international community, because if you are targeting civilians based on their ethnicity, it means that you are actually having a political objective or something you want to achieve. If they want to attack and they have a political case, they should attack the police stations or the army, but not the civilians, normal civilians.
While he condemns the attacks, Boy says he is not certain if they are connected to rebel forces. No motive has been identified for the attacks. Ayen Bior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan's former Deputy Minister of Defense says the warring factions in the country are using ethnicity to destroy the country. Majak Dagot says the increase in violence in parts of Equatoria and the targeted killings of South Sudanese civilians based on their ethnicity has affected relationship among various South Sudanese communities. He says the leaders of the country should create an urgent forum for national dialogue to discuss the security dilemma facing South Sudanese.
You know that each of these sectarian constituencies, whether with the government or with the armed rebellion, have widely and seductively missold their agenda of dividing our people and setting our people against one another. For example, in the government circles, the ills of the SPLM, IO, and Riek Machar are overblown, and you know that in the TV and in the radio, in the funerals, in public gatherings. These have been overblown to an extent that nothing is left to keep the social fabric together. Likewise, the opposition people, especially those associated with the SPLM-IO, have used the same strategy of trying to paint a picture that it is the Dinka, and it is the Dinka people who are the problem, and it is the Dinka ethnicity which is the problem. And as a result, what the so-called Gian Council of Elders do, this sectarian institution, this sectarian outfit called Gian Council of Elders do, is conflated to me together with what the innocent Gian people who are now being murdered in the highways do. So on both sides of the divide, you see that there is upward sectarian ethnic mobilization. You have heard of what has happened in the villages in Equatoria, that farmers in their fields are being strafed from above using helicopter gunships, that villages are being razed to ground. And you know that in the swamps of Sut in Upper Nile, especially in the Unity State, the Nuer people are being targeted. And on the other side, on the side of the rebels, you know that villages are being attacked. The Dinka villages are being attacked now in Upper Nile. And the innocent Jiang commuters, people traveling between one point and the other in Equatoria, are being targeted. It is because this sectarian and ethnic mobilization has come to its full gestation, and it is ripping our country apart.
These groups that are attacking people on the road, who are they? Who is arming them? Are these South Sudanese? Are these rebels? Who are they? We just hear unknown gunmen, armed men. Who are they?
Well, from long time ago, South Sudan has not been in a position to discharge its mandate as a legitimate authority to provide public security for all South Sudanese. And therefore, you have been hearing of unknown gunmen, journalists have been killed, people who have critical views against the government have been killed, and all these kind of things. In addition, when the conflict broke out in 2013, different groups began to form. Some of them were political. Some of them were accidental, something that you can call accidental guerrillas. And these accidental guerrillas form major part of people who have now become a problem in Equatoria, because some of the youth in Equatoria took to the bush because of the atrocities that they saw being meted out against their villages. This is destroying all of us, and it is not good for the country, and it is actually serving the interests of the sectarian forces in the country, whether they are in the government. This is what they want to do. They want the Jiang to be targeted so that the Jiang are mobilized and they galvanize around the throne in Juba. Likewise, those bandits who would want to target Jiang, they think if the Jiang move on the people of Equatoria or move on the Nuer, this is going to polarize the country and this is going to give them voice. So people like ourselves, we are placed between the rock and the hard place, because the sectarian forces have come to this level of superiority and they want to dictate the national agenda.
Given this dangerous situation, it's a potential serious violence in South Sudan. In your own words, if given an opportunity to advise the leadership in the country, what would you tell them?
What I would say, in my view, we need to sit down, talk frankly about our fear, talk frankly about our security dilemmas, and address these fears and dilemmas and live together as a nation. This is the only way we can forge a future. The SPLM leaders, former political detainees, perturbed by this situation, have issued a press statement today appealing to the people of South Sudan to exercise restraint, and to remind themselves of that difficult history of common struggle and collective action and solidarity to break free from the domination and marginalization and colonialism of the Northern Sudanese Arabs. We have a future together. Our future does not lie in what sectarian forces are telling you. Our future lies in our common destiny. We must form a state and a nation that is mutually respecting, that is tolerant, that is able to fight together regardless of ethnicity, tribe, gender, age, and what have you.
That's Majak Dagot, former Deputy Minister of Defense and member of the SPLM, former detainees. He was speaking to me from London earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees are draining healthcare services for host communities in Uganda. Find out what's being done about it when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you like to be remembered?
I'd like to remember that someone who gave back to society, as someone who touched lives and helped others.
I would like people to remember me by leaving a positive legacy as a hallmark. You know, easing the pains of people who are suffering, you know, like giving that compassionate and passionate care to them.
I would like to be remembered as someone who actually made an impact in my own small ways. Whether it is that I helped someone in life or I just, even if it is just one individual, something small.
I would want to be remembered as a good citizen of my country one day. Well, it's very important to do the right thing because seeing what's going on, we wish there are many good people out there who would want to do the right thing in this country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment. Today we are talking about the impact of South Sudanese refugees on health services of neighboring countries. Northern Uganda District Health Officer Dr. Alfred Yai says the huge influx of South Sudanese refugees in the Yumbe area has caused severe shortage of medicine in hospitals and health centers. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Arua.
District health officials say Yumbe has only one referral hospital which is serving over 130,000 South Sudanese refugees as well as tens of thousands of residents in the host community. Dr. Alfred Yai says Yumbe Hospital has only three medical doctors treating a huge population with only a limited amount of drugs. He says healthcare workers are overwhelmed with the number of sick refugees being referred to the hospital on a daily basis.
You find that we're not able to provide very good quality services to both these refugees and the host population as a result of this pressure on the available resources.
Dr. Yai says most of the refugees admitted to Yumbe Hospital suffer from malaria, acute respiratory tract infections, or diarrheal diseases. He says there is an outbreak of acute diarrheal disease among South Sudanese refugees. He says humanitarian aid agencies and the Ugandan Health Department are trying to contain the spread of the diseases.
We understand this is because of the shortages in water and sanitation for the refugees. Just last month, we have had an outbreak of cholera where up to 58 people were affected, three of whom were indigenous people, but the rest were refugees. We have managed to control that cholera outbreak, but right now we are seeing more cases of bloody diarrhea, that is dysentery, and we are trying to work with the people from water and sanitation sector. We can improve on the access to safe water and the use of latrines and so on.
CARE International is providing an emergency response services in the camp. Emergency response team leader David Sandy says he hopes more aid agencies will help alleviate the deteriorating humanitarian conditions in the camps. Dr. Yai is appealing to both the Ugandan government and UNHCR to support health facilities in the area. He says the district urgently needs more medicine, doctors, midwives and laboratory technicians to provide services to the refugees and the host community.
We also need the supplementation of the medicines that are received, because the medicines we are getting currently are planned for the existing host population. But of course, we cannot neglect the refugees. So this calls for additional resources from UNHCR and the government of Uganda.
South Sudanese fled the country for safety in neighboring Uganda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan, Ethiopia, and Kenya when deadly fighting broke out in July. The International Organization for Migration has expressed concern about the regional impact of the South Sudan conflict on neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Jonglei State Primary and Secondary School teachers went on strike today after the State Education Ministry did not raise their salaries, promote any teachers, or provide allowances as promised by the National Education Ministry months ago. Jacob Achek has the story for VOA from Bor.
A student at Bor Secondary School chat excitedly lead one day after teachers walked off the strike. Last week, the teachers from Jonglei State declared a statewide strike after new salaries structure were announced by the Ministry of Labor and Public Service in July. The head of teachers' committee, Matthew Rubin, says most teachers raise concern about the new salaries structure.
Are we not part of the government such that we shall benefit from that structure? That is the reason that we have put our tool down, and as we put our tool down, we get some of the condition. If this document is effective, then we need money to be paid to us right away from that month up to today.
The country's ongoing economic crisis, including skyrocketing prices, has severely affected teachers who receive less than 600 South Sudanese pounds since January 2016. Anyidi Girl Primary School teacher Daniel Chol says he cannot afford to buy food or basic household commodities on his current salaries. A bag of charcoal costs 400 South Sudanese pound, and a 50 kgs of maize flour is more than 2,000 pound in the market. Chol says current salaries discourage teachers who earn below 2,000 pound in a month. Chol says if teachers are paid the new salaries, it will help make a difference.
We tried to make a communication whether this circular is effective or not, but we just realized this circular is effective, but it is not implemented. According to the document, I will receive around 1,776 pounds, but they will not solve the family problem, but they will cater for the small affairs.
The Ministry of Education told teachers on Saturday that a committee was formed to review teachers' file, date of promotion and qualification before promotions are announced. The letter written by Director General Achuos Garangbul says, in the meantime, the school must remain open. Achua says the ministry has condemned the teachers' strike, and teachers who do not report to work should face administrative disciplinary measures. Paul Machar David, a member of the teachers' committee, says teachers will not call off the strike.
We held a meeting and in Director General promised to give all the teachers appointment, and then we also talk about the promotion, that all teachers will be promoted. And then in regard to payment, he said that the circular will start paying teachers from September salaries. That is what he has told us. We told him that we will not open the school until we see the payment started in September.
David accused the Education Ministry of not following through on its promises. For a primary pupil, Rebecca Ayan says it is unfair for teachers to strike because she says it will disrupt their studies.
One day is not teaching, which means we shall not study again. Our heart will be in block, and then we shall not be laughing. We want our teachers to be back.
A primary aid candidate, David Adior John, blames state government official for not responding to teachers' demands. Adior says that the strike will affect the academic studies of all candidates across the state for higher learning if teachers wait for their demand to be implemented.
It affected our study very many things. Like now we are not taught, but we are the candidate open. I think that the government have the problem now because the men of the teacher, they are released out there, they increase, but the government of a Jonglei state can't brought them out. That is the problem of the teacher, go and strike.
Teacher says about 70% teachers have worked on a temporary basis since 2007. Last year, during a similar strike, the teachers' demands were accepted but were not fully implemented by the government. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A new report from Save the Children says each year, 15 million girls are married before they turn 18, and some are as young as 10 years old. The aid group says there are 700 million women around the world who were married during their childhood. The report is released on this International Day of the Girl. It is entitled Every Last Girl, Free to Live, Free to Learn, Free from Harm. President and CEO Carolyn Miles describes child marriage as an enormous problem. She says one girl under 15 is married every 7 seconds. This past weekend's attacks on civilians traveling on the Yei-Juba Road have sparked social media outrage from members of the diaspora. While some are calling for calm and an immediate investigation, others have been accused of inciting more violence. Reports say 21 people died and 20 others were wounded, including women and children, during the weekend attacks. Scores of South Sudanese from around the world expressed their outrage over the incident. Ambassador Gordon Bwai, counselor in diaspora affairs at the South Sudan Embassy here in Washington, says the government has deployed more forces to the roads and is calling for calm and restraint, while at the same time condemning the road violence. One person wrote in that he's praying for restraint to prevail in South Sudan, while another person described the killings as cowardly and wrote that gunmen should make a clear distinction between government and innocent civilians, adding that waging war against the government should not involve any civilians. Bwai says there are not enough government security personnel to cover all parts of the main roads in South Sudan. Attacks on travelers in the country have occurred since the violence broke out nearly 3 years ago. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a song by the Freedom Boys. We have been listening to Freedom Boys with the song Koneta Nanbora. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.